vasami jamuna jale nirmite babane pitra yavad achyuta darshanam kalinditi samakhyata vasami jamuna jale nirmite babane pitra yavad achyuta darshanam kalinditi samakyata vasami jamana jale nirmite bhavane pitra yavadachuta darsanam kalinditi samakyata vasami jamana jale nirmite bhavane pitra yavadachuta darsanam kalinditi samakyata vasami jamuna jale nirmite bhavane pitra yavadachuta darsanam. Kalinditi samakyata vasami jamuna jale nirmite bhavane pitra yavadachuta darsanam kalinditi samakyata vasami jamuna jale nirmite bhavane pitra yavadachuta darshanam. Kalindi
kalindi
iti thus samakhyata named vasami I am living jamuna jale in the water of the Jamuna nirmite built bhavane in a mansion pitra by my father yavat until achyuta of Lord Krishna darshanam the seeing I am known as Kalindi, and I live in a mansion my father built for me within the water of the Jamuna. There I will stay until I meet Lord Achyuta. Purport. Since Kalindi was a beloved child of the sun god himself, who would dare disturb her? From this incident, we can appreciate the beautiful spiritual processes executed in previous ages by great souls. Unlike the so-called love in worldly love affairs, beautiful Kalindi's love for Lord Krishna was pure and perfect. Even though Kalindi was a tender young girl, her determination to marry Krishna was so strong that she arranged for her father to build her a house in the Jamuna where she could perform severe austerities until the day her beloved came. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gananjana Sadakaya Chakshurumilitam Jena Tasmaye Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahayam Dadati Svapadam Tikam Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Gadim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. Paramananda Madhavam Sri Chaitanya Ishvaram. Krishna wanted Arjuna to appreciate the devotion of Kalindi, and so therefore he sent Arjuna to speak to the young girl who had presented herself on the bank of the Jamuna. Krishna already knew who she was and what her relationship was with him, but in order to highlight her devotional service, her mood of devotion, her surrender, Krishna sent Arjuna to inquire from her who she was and what her purpose was. And she's explaining now that she is Kalindi, the personification of the river Jamuna, and that she lives in the river Jamuna, in a house which has been created by her father, who happens to be Agni himself, the fire god. So she was performing austerities and penances in this residence created by her father, waiting for Krishna to appear before her. She's an eternal consort of the Lord. And she was simply waiting here. Yavat achuta darshanam. Until Lord Krishna appears, achuta means infallible, Lord Krishna. Darshanam means to see. Yavat means until. So she was prepared to wait until she saw her Lord. She wasn't interested in any other husband, male personality. She was only interested in getting the darshan of Krishna, being reunited with the Lord. So this is described here as a very powerful demonstration of chastity and devotion, discipline. Actually, it's a very good example of discipline in devotional service. So Kalindi sets the example of dedication to Krishna. Her love for Krishna was pure and perfect, such that she wasn't going to be distracted by anything else, as Vidyananda Maharaj mentions here, in contrast to the love affairs of the worldly persons. You know, one day they'll be attracted to one person, then another day they'll be attracted to something else, someone else. Her love for Krishna was focused on Krishna alone, and she wasn't prepared to accept anything else. And she's prepared to stay in that location for as long as was necessary to achieve the darshan of Achyuta. And she is an exemplar of the mood of devotion that a an aspiring devotee needs to cultivate. She's a very, very young girl, and so therefore, you know, it wouldn't be surprising if she was distracted or attracted by another. Just as, you know, it's not surprising that in our pursuit of Krishna consciousness, sometimes we get distracted or attracted to other things. But her example is of chastity, if you like, or discipline, which is a symptom or a qualification of a disciple. One has to remain faithful to, dedicated to, chaste, if you like, to the instructions of the spiritual master. And those instructions are the means by which we can attain Krishna. This is one of the reasons why we worship Gaur Nitai, or Guru and Gauranga. We approach Krishna through the agency of the spiritual master, Lord Nityananda or Lord Balaram. Lord Balaram is Krishna's first expansion, and of course his mood is one of service to the Lord. We don't worship Gaur Garadha, but we worship Gaur Nitai. Because by worshipping Lord Nityananda, who's the eternal spiritual master, one can actually, by taking shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda, one can have all material attraction and all material affection removed. All obstacles. Nitai Pada Kamala. Koti Chandra Sushitao. If one can take shelter of Lord Nityananda's lotus feet, then they're considered to be more soothing than thousands of moons. You know, the moon has a very soothing and cooling effect. And living entities are described as being consumed or burnt up in a fire of material existence, which basically means the mode of passion. Mode of passion is fiery. Material desires are fiery. Right? So if one takes shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda, then one can get shelter from this fire of material existence. So what does it mean to take shelter of Lord Nityananda? Taking shelter of Lord Nityananda means that actually, for us, it means we should go and preach. This is Lord Nityananda's mission. Lord Nityananda is a preacher. That's his mood in the mission of serving Lord Chaitanya. So if we want to get Lord Chaitanya's mercy, then it's recommended that we approach Lord Chaitanya by first of all approaching Lord Nityananda. And we approach Lord Nityananda by serving him. And that service rendered to Lord Nityananda is through the Sankirtan mission, through preaching Krishna consciousness, whether it's book distribution or prasadam distribution or worshipping the deities. Basically, the activities of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness are all geared towards preaching Krishna consciousness. This is the mood of Lord Nityananda. Bringing people to closer to Krishna, some way or another, giving people an opportunity to come closer to Krishna. This is the mood of Lord Nityananda. And of course, that's not particularly pleasant work, because it means we have to associate with, of course, we're recommended to associate with the devotees, but preaching means we have to go out and associate with materialistic people. And associating with materialistic people is not very pleasant for a devotee. And what it means is sometimes we have to perform austerities. Sometimes. All of the time. Some form of austerity. But by remaining fixed and focused in our Krishna consciousness, were able to endure the austerities of having to deal with the materialistic persons. So in one sense, preaching forces us to be Krishna conscious. Because the only way one can go and preach is by remaining faithful to, chaste to, the process of devotional service, chaste to the instructions of the spiritual master. We learn these by studying the books of the Goswamis, of the previous Acharyas, by studying the Srimad Bhagavatam, by studying the Bhagavad Gita, especially studying the books given by Rupa Goswami. That's how we become Krishna conscious, and that's how we remain strong enough to then to work under Lord Nityananda's direction or under Lord Nityananda's shelter in preaching Krishna consciousness. This is our system. A simple system, if you like. But we can see here, Kalindi also was prepared to perform austerities until she saw Krishna. So we can take heart from her example. If we are to be successful in Krishna consciousness, then we have to be prepared to endure the austerities of preaching in order to become eligible to be united with Krishna. I think, practically speaking, once one takes shelter of the instruction of the spiritual master, once one takes shelter of Lord Nityananda, then one is on the path of perfection. One is, practically speaking, already connected with Krishna. At least we may not fully realize it. So Prabhupada gives the example, devotional service is like a mango. In the beginning, a mango is sour when it's not ripe. And so its taste may not be very pleasant. But as it matures and ripens, then it becomes sweeter and sweeter. It's a mango in the beginning, so our devotional service connects us with Krishna. And it has its potency. It is still devotional service, but because it is not mature or ripe, it may not be as sweet as devotional service which has matured into loving affection for Krishna. So in the beginning, we may not have that taste of loving devotional service for Krishna, but that doesn't mean that we're not connected to Krishna. You know, another example by Rupa Goswami, the Nectar of Instruction, is of the person who's jaundiced, who takes the medicine, which is the sugar crystals, sugar candy, which is will cure the disease. But because one has the disease, the sugar tastes bitter. But as one sucks on the sugar candy, and gradually, by its purification, by its purificatory power, it gradually cures the person with jaundice, so that eventually they can taste the sweetness of the sugar candy. So, because of our immaturity in Krishna consciousness, we may not appreciate our connectedness with Krishna. Because Krishna is very merciful, and He gives us a taste, a glimpse of the perfection of devotional service to inspire us. So, Kalindi is a good example to meditate on of a very simple-hearted, pure-hearted, fully dedicated servant, fully surrendered to the Lord, prepared to endure the austerities required to get the association of Krishna and not be distracted. That was her vow. Her vow was, I will stay here and perform austerities until Krishna appears. So we can meditate on that simple mood of service, very simple, unselfish attitude, actually. Of course, it's that unselfish attitude that is very appealing to, it's attractive to Krishna. Krishna is attracted by the unselfishness, or the humility, if you like, and the determination of the devotee. Because that is a symbol, if you like, of the desire of the devotee to please Krishna no matter what. So her desire was so strong that her father built her a house in the Jamuna where she could perform these austerities till Krishna would come. I was thinking of an example that I could cite in this connection. And it just so happens that today is the disappearance, is it the disappearance day? I think it is, of Ganga Mata Goswamini. And she, it's interesting, I was reading her short biography last night, Ganga Mata Goswamini. She was the daughter of a king of Bengal near Orissa. And from a very early age, she was attracted to devotional service. And she would chant Hare Krishna, she would worship the deity, she would perform bhajan, and was not at all interested in anything material, practically. In fact, her family were very worried about her because, you know, they wanted to marry her, which is fairly natural. You know, the tradition is you get your daughters married so that they can be protected. And she's actually a good example of somebody, like, because it's interesting here, you know, Kalindi was performing these austerities, but it appears as if she was being unprotected. But because of her purity and her dedication to devotional service, then actually she was protected. And Ganga Mata Goswami, she's a very good example of this principle. From a young age, she would only be engaged in devotional service. She wasn't interested in it. When her parents encouraged her to get married, and she said, I already have given my heart to Krishna. And I don't want to marry, you know, one of the, you know, these faulty men of the material world who's going to die. Why marry somebody who's going to, you know, let you down? That was her mood. And eventually she was, at a young age, in her 20s, she was, her family, you know, her elders passed away, and she was eventually given the charge of the kingdom, despite the fact that she wasn't married. And she oversaw the affairs of the state. But then, on pretense of, or on the plea of inspecting her kingdom, then she left the management of the kingdom, because, you know, in those days there were smaller sort of king rajas. She left. She said, I need to go off and investigate the kingdom. You take care of affairs here, and then I'll come back. But actually what she did was she went off on pilgrimage. And she went to Jagannath Puri. And in Jagannath Puri, after seeing the deity of Lord Jagannath, she had a dream. And the Lord instructed her that she should go to Vrindavan. And that in Vrindavan, she would meet the Lord. She would meet her Lord and Master. And her life would be perfect. So she, according to the history, she's less than 25. So around about 25 years of age, she went to Vrindavan. And in Vrindavan, she started performing her bhajan and meditation on devotional service more intensely. She came into the association of a devotee called Haridas Pandit, who was a disciple of Gadadhar. I'm not sure whether she was a disciple of Gadadhar Pandit or not. But anyway, she was coming in. And this is not long after Lord Chaitanya's disappearance. There were still personalities that had performed Sankirtan pastimes with Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. So she's a close post-contemporary of Lord Chaitanya. So she approached Haridas Pandit and begged him for initiation. And he said to her that, look, you're the daughter of a king and a queen, and you know this performance of austerities and penances is not suited for a girl of your character. You should go home to your family. And she didn't take his instruction seriously. She felt he was just testing her. In fact, he was just testing her resolve. So she dedicated herself to chanting, you know, practically speaking, chanting 64 rounds a day, more, eating very, very simply, just performing madhukari, you know, begging alms from the residents of Vrindavan, and living a very austere and simple life of penance, engaged fully in her bhajan. And you know, she was becoming thin and emaciated, but still she was fully enthusiastic about her devotional service. So eventually Haridas Pandit, seeing her sincerity and her determination, he realized that actually she was a very worthy and eligible candidate. So he gave her initiation. And then he arranged for her to, there was another, he didn't have any disciples, and he had taken a vow that he would not take any disciples. That is the significance of it. He didn't have any disciples. And he didn't want to take any disciples, but because of her determination and sincerity, he took her as a disciple. Then he made an arrangement. There was an older lady, 50 years old or so, living at Govardhan, I think. And he made an arrangement. You go and live with her and together perform bhajan. She was only 25 and the older lady was about 50. So every day they would circumambulate Govardhan Hill, living at Radhakund. And she was a highly celebrated and popular devotee who, you know, studied the Srimad Bhagavatam and studied the scriptures of the Goswamis and became very, very learned. And after 25 years, which made her around about 50, I guess, when Haridas Pandit was very old, then he told her, he said, you should go to Jagannath Puri, you should return back to your home, and you should excavate the house of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, which is now dilapidated and there is no worship taking place there, and you should begin again the worship of that was performed previously in Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's house. And you should teach and preach in Jagannath Puri. That's your, you know, that was then, he gave her Jagannath Puri as her Prabhu Datta Desh, told her not to leave Jagannath Puri. So she returned to Jagannath Puri, and found the house of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, which was just near the Jagannath temple, and started the worship, very, very simple worship of the deity of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, the Shalagram Shila. And She would give discourses on the Srimad Bhagavatam in the evening. And so she became quite famous and renowned, and started to initiate devotees and encourage the preaching of Krishna consciousness in the mood of, or following in the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. She became so popular that even the king of Puri would come in disguise to hear her teaching. Right? The king of Puri would disguise himself in the mood, I guess, of Maharaj Prataparudra. You know, if you wanted to get the association of the disciples of Lord Chaitanya, then you couldn't be a pound, shillings and pence person. You had to be a sincere bhakta, not just a worldly person. In fact, he became so enlivened by her association, people became so enlivened by her preaching and by her example, that naturally they wanted to become devotees. I can't remember the sequence of events, but he eventually wanted to become her. He wanted to become her disciple. I think that came later. He, out of affection for her, he wanted to give her a better... She was living very simply, and he wanted to give her a better facility, but she refused it. I said, I'm not going to take any money from you. She didn't need it. She said, I'm happy just to worship and to live simply as I am now. And then the king, I think what happened was, it's interesting because I've read three or four descriptions of her, of this particular story, and each one of them is somewhat different as to the details. But there is a little gut near the Jagannath Mandir, which is called the Sweta Ganga, which is where the Ganga flows. Right? It's called the White Ganga. And the king made a declaration. You know, he dedicated that location to Ganga Mata Goswamini. She wasn't called Ganga Mata Goswamini at that stage. He made a declaration because she wouldn't take anything from him. Then he made a declaration of her chastity, of her devotion, of her discipline, of her austerity, and he wanted it to be known that she should be recognized as a very, very saintly person. So apparently at one time of the year, people from Jagannath Puri, just as the devotees from Bengal would come to Jagannath Puri, so people would go to take bath in the Ganga. Of course, they would go to this, you know, this little location where the Sweta Ganga is. Anyway, that's one story where everybody goes to this location. But there's another description where it says everybody was going to Bengal. She wanted to go to Bengal, but because her spiritual master had told her you can't leave Jagannath Puri, so then she gave up the idea of going to Bengal to take bath in the Ganga. And so she went to take bath in the Sweta Ganga instead. And she did this at midnight. Now, I don't know why it was done at midnight, but anyway, this is how the story goes. When she took bath in the Ganga, then this great tumultuous sound of thousands of people taking bath in the Ganga all at once enveloped her. And then she was carried away by the waves of the Ganga. And then the next thing she knew, she was carried into the temple of Lord Jagannath and onto the altar. Right, so there was a huge commotion, a loud noise, you know, as if there's thousands of people bathing in the Ganga, so much so that it woke up all of the priests, and the pandas came, and the king also came, and they said, oh, what are you doing here? And their assumption was, aha, you've come to steal the jewellery of the deity. Otherwise, why else would you be in here at midnight? She wasn't particularly perturbed because she understood that actually it was Lord Jagannath who had brought her into the temple for his darshan. But in any case, they said, okay, you're a thief, into the dungeon. So the king, you know, impelled by the pundits and so forth, they threw her into the dungeon. She wasn't worried about that. She was chanting Hare Krishna. Anyway, that night, Lord Jagannath appeared to the king in a dream, and Lord Jagannath was extremely angry. And he said, you know, you better let her out of prison. She's my dear devotee. I brought her into the temple for my darshan. I want you to release her immediately. You should have to offer your obeisances and you have to beg her forgiveness, and I want you to become her disciple. So then the king, realizing his big mistake, then rushed to the prison and fell at her feet and offered his obeisances, begged forgiveness, and asked to become a disciple of and from that point on she was known. That's when she was named Ganga Mata. So I thought it was a nice example of, you know, the chastity and the dedication and the determination. Ganga Mata Goswami is a good example, like Kalindi, of complete dedication and dependence upon Krishna. And that when a devotee gives themselves to Krishna completely with full dependence, then Krishna looks after them. Here Krishna's appearing before when Arjuna finds out who Kalindi is and then brings her to Krishna, then Krishna immediately puts her on his chariot, and later on there's a marriage is arranged. And so her desire was fulfilled. And also Ganga Mata Goswamini, she is a very dedicated and surrendered servant of the Lord. And as a result, then Krishna completely looked after her and protected her. She's, you know, a very famous as a Vaishnavi. Later on, there was a smarter Brahmana who came to see her and who eventually became her disciple and learnt from her. I forgot what his name was now. But anyway, he then preached Krishna consciousness all over Orissa and parts of Bengal under her direction. So she was responsible for a lot of the establishment of the Gaudiya tradition throughout Orissa and Bengal. Such was her potency. So we can meditate on her, on Kalindi and Ganga Mata Goswamini today, and meditate on that purity of heart and focus on serving Krishna only. Serving Krishna only and nothing else. You know, usually we're thinking about everything else but serving Krishna only. It's also Baladeva Vidyabhushan's disappearance day today also, and he's another very prominent acharya within our line. He was a disciple of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and it was to him that fell the task of writing the Govinda Bhashya. You know, there was a dispute in Jayapur as to the authenticity of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas that are worshipping Radha Govinda. And I think the Sri Vaishnavas were challenging the Gaudiyas and saying, you don't have a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. Every sampradaya, bona fide sampradaya, has a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, and you don't have one. Because as far as Lord Chaitanya and others, you know, Lord Chaitanya and his followers, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. So it doesn't need a commentary. We already have the commentary. It's written by Vyasadeva himself. So anyway, I think it was the king of Jaipur, wanted the resolution of this conflict, you know. And so the devotees went to, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas went to Vrindavan and begged Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, please come, you know, solve this problem for us. We're being challenged and we don't have an answer. We don't have a commentary as far as the other sampradaya, the three sampradayas concerned. We don't have a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur at that stage was very old. And so he instructed Baladeva Vijayabhushan, who was his disciple. I empower you to go and solve the problem. So there was a debate, and it was decided that Baladeva Vijayabhushan would compile a commentary, and actually that commentary was dictated to him by Govindaji himself, and it was accepted as the authorized commentary on the Vedanta Sutra and the Gaudiya Vaishnavas as a result remained worshipping the deity of Govinda. So the challenge was met, and Baladeva Vijayabhushan wrote many books actually. We study his commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. In fact, Prabhupada dedicated his Bhagavad Gita to Baladeva Vijayabhushan. Another devotee that we can meditate on and pray to for inspiration to continue as pure servants of Krishna. It's quite interesting reading Baladeva Vijayabhushan's commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. It is very powerful. But there's that blue covered book that Bhaniswami just translated last year. And of course you can find in a lot of... It's interesting, if you read Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary and you read Baladeva Vijayabhushan's commentary, then you can find elements of what they say in Prabhupada's purports. And Prabhupada was expert in, you know, pulling the conclusions of the previous acharyas and putting it into his Bhagavad Gita as it is. So does anybody have any comments or questions on any of these points? Yes, it's interesting.
Just going back to the shloka.
Yeah.
The last time was so wonderful.
Mm.
But what I am trying to look at is how does fire happen? You have a daughter for years, but it's fire and water, and where does that mean? Law coming as a demi god, was everything in offering to an initiation to not a particular Vishnu? So what is the role of Lord Agni?
Whoa. How many questions was that? Three questions. What are the questions? That's a good question. What are the questions? The first question was, what is the role of Agni as the fire god in his producing a daughter who lived in the river? Huh? And because fire and water don't sort of get on. Right? Good question that I don't know the answer of. And now what was the other one? Through which we make the offerings to the Lord. Well, one thing is the demigods are potent, obviously. more potent than we could understand or even experience in this day and age. Agni Dev is the representative of Lord Vishnu. The demigods are the representatives of the Lord, and so consequently they can accept offerings on behalf of the Lord. Like devotees accept offerings on behalf of Krishna. They don't accept them for themselves, but they accept them on behalf of the Lord. So we can understand that Agni, you know, in the fire sacrifice represents the tongue of the Lord when we're making the offerings. And in fact, when we do the fire yajnas, we light the fire and we call on the Lord, please be present. And we call on different forms of the Vishnu to be present when we perform the sacrifice. Now, how I don't know how Kalindi, who you know is the Jamuna, is the daughter of the of Agni.
Which is the daughter of Yamaraj.
Well, it says here since. Yes. Since Kalindi was a beloved child of the sun god himself, who would dare disturb her? I could speculate, but it's probably better that I don't. But we could do some research, I suppose. See, it's interesting here. This description of Kalindi and her appearance and so forth is very, very brief. We're getting a very, very short synopsis. So a lot of detail is left out. A lot of detail is left out. And, you know, you may find a Purana or other itihasra or whatever history which would describe how this all takes place. So because we're lacking detail. But really what it indicates is that, you know, these personalities are very, very special. They're extraordinary personalities who have potencies over and above, far beyond any of the capacities that we have or could even imagine. That's how it strikes me. You know? No. Our pundits here don't know the answer to that question, so we'll just have to put it into the mystery box.
You mentioned that the devotee was trying to selflessly serve.
Yes.
At least at the beginning, I mean, they set up your own fantasy.
Yeah. Yes.
And therefore, when someone begins to experience that the devotional service does indeed provide, you know, the greatness of happiness, you know, great shelter.
Yeah.
There can be a tendency, at least in my part, to do devotional service for that reason.
To be happy?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Where and when does the transition take place of selfless service?
Selfless service. When and where?
How?
How, when and where does one's transition from motivated to unmotivated devotional service? That's a good question. Anya bilashita shunyam jnana kamajana vritam. By association of pure devotees, one can learn the same mood or the same, one can acquire the same consciousness or the same attitude, if you like, of service. So, you know, we can get that mood by, basically by association. By studying the scriptures, by studying the teachings of the Goswamis. By, you know, one of the methodologies, as I mentioned earlier, was by taking up a role or a part in the Sankirtan movement. following in the footsteps of Lord Nityananda. Lord Nityananda's Sankirtan mission is to save others. So when we put ourselves into a position where we're helping other people make progress, then that's a very high level of self-sacrifice. Because very often when we go out to help others become devotees, it means we have to put ourselves in a into difficult positions, difficult situation. So it means we give up our own personal consideration to help others make advancement in Krishna consciousness. So that's why preaching is encouraged, because it means I don't worry about my own advancement and my own situation, my own comfort, if you like. I'm prepared to sacrifice my situation, my energy, my effort for the benefit of others. So therefore that preaching spirit or that preaching mood is considered to be the highest sacrifice, because it means I put aside my own. Of course, we know that Krishna says there is no one more dear to me than he who preaches this Bhagavad Gita to the devotees. So we know that we'll be saved, but still, in preaching Krishna consciousness, we still put ourselves out. And because we're prepared to put ourselves out for the benefit of others, and that's very pleasing to Krishna, then that's the beginning, if you like, of that selfless service. Anybody else like to make a comment on that?
And you said that you have selfless service and purity of heart.
Yes, and you know, if you surrender to Krishna in that way, then Krishna will actually fulfill your desires in any case. I don't know whether I should tell you this story or not. It might be embarrassing for me in a Chinjaroopa. I remember when I in June or July, then August, I can't remember where it was, I went to Balaram, and this is why I was a brahmachari, and I said I wanted to get married. And Balaram said, "Who do you want to get married to?" I thought, "What do you mean, who do I want to get married to? I want to marry my wife." So anyway, Balaam said, "Oh, all right, okay, we'll work something out for you." And then he didn't speak to me ever again about it. And at the end of the year, we had our... and in those days, the devotees used to keep a Chinchuripa in Sydney and me in Melbourne, because whenever we were in the same temple together, then we would get disturbed, or I would get disturbed. I don't think a Chinchuripa got too disturbed. So anyway, we had the Sankirtan festival after the marathon up at New Govardhan, and I remember that day before the festival started, there was a Gaura Aarti, and I was thinking, what arrangements have they made for me? Because I knew that I'd be seeing a Chinchuripa, and I was getting all mental, You like that, do you? On the mental platform. But anyway, then we were having a nice fired up kirtan, and then I was praying to Radha Govardhan and Hari, and I said, forget it, whatever happens, happens. I'll just absorb myself in chanting Hare Krishna and forget about all this marriage stuff. And then the next day, Balaram called me up and he said, "You're getting married tomorrow." I went to a Chinchuripa and I brought my cloth to a Chinchuripa, and she said to me, "I told you this would happen." Yeah. Anyway, but it was interesting. At that particular point in time, I just thought, okay, I'll surrender to Krishna and I won't worry about it. And then Krishna made the arrangement. So you know, my experience, if you surrender to Krishna and leave it all up to him, then he'll look after you. Krishna's not a miser or a poor man or ungrateful for the service that the devotees have rendered. And his devotees also are not ungrateful and miserly. So even though, you know, we live austerely in one sense, by the same token also Krishna looks after the devotees and keeps them engaged in service. Krishna doesn't give facilities to the devotees unless they really demand it. You know, really demand, you know, I want it, I've got to have it, you know. But he won't give it if it's not good for the devotee. Just like, you know, the demigods, is that story of Vrikasura, you know. He wanted the benediction that whoever's head he touched, it would explode. And so he petitioned Lord Shiva. And he did that sacrifice where he cutting off bits of his flesh, and eventually he was going to cut off his head. So then Lord Shiva said, whoa. So he gave him the benediction. But then that benediction wasn't good for him or good for anybody. Krishna wouldn't give that kind of benediction unless, you know, you're absolute, you know. But Krishna gives us enough that will still remain in his service. Huh? That's the important thing, to remain in devotional service. So especially for us, you know, it seems to me that the preaching, there's some preaching, some book distribution or some prasadam distribution or, you know, some supportive activity that even helps the preaching, if we're not able to go and, you know, preach ourselves in one sense. Even the good behaviour of a devotee is preaching, because that means austerity. Getting up early in the morning and performing our bhajan and kirtan and so forth, japa, all that, that's preaching. And when we're prepared to put ourselves out, you know, for the benefit of others, then Krishna sees that as the seed of pure devotional service. Just like it's mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita in the 10th, was it the 12th chapter, that how even just giving in charity is considered to be the beginning of devotional service. Because it means that there's that mood of, I'll put aside my interests for helping somebody else. So, you know, giving in charity is considered like a very preliminary stage, if you like, of devotional service. There's a gradation, there's a level, you know. You should always be thinking of Krishna and never forget him, is like the highest level. But then if you can't do that, then follow the regulated principles of devotional service, which will bring you to that platform. Then if you can't do that, then I've forgotten all of the levels. But, you know, cultivate knowledge, perform yoga, practice, right? And then before that, or after that actually, in the sequence of the verses, it says, you know, give in charity to somebody. You know, open up a hospital. Prabhupada says, open up a hospital. Feed poor people. Which is one of the reasons why, you know, even the devotees will encourage people, give in charity to us. You know, give in charity to the Hare Krishnas, so that we will then distribute that charity for others in the form of prasadam, transcendental knowledge, the Harinam, book distribution. Yeah. So that, you know, giving of your own time, giving of your own effort for bringing others to Krishna consciousness is our, you know, mode of sacrifice, if you like. So when does it happen? Have a chat with Nanda Mandir. He can tell you when and where and how. Right? Or, you know, have a chat with Chiranjeev at around about... what time do they go down to Crossways? These are the time on the roster. That's when, where and how. Then automatically, you know, the change will start taking place within the heart. See, it's interesting, you know, we think, oh, I've got to make it, you know. But Prabhupada was very pragmatic. He, you know, basically put these things into practice. And then if we go and, you know, we may not fully understand the benefit. Huh? Good example is the example of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when a learned, scholarly gentleman approached him and had questions to ask, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was too busy at that point. So he said, "Go and help the pujari, clean the puja paraphernalia." So he was cleaning the puja paraphernalia, waiting to get this. When he got to see Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said, "What are your questions?" He says, "It's okay, my questions have been answered." Right, so, practical engagement in devotional service very often gives or brings realization. Sometimes we think we've got to study Prabhupada's books, really absorb ourselves just to understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. But actually, Krishna says, Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam piti purvakam tadami buddhi yogam tam. He says, "I give you the understanding by which you can come to me when you're engaged fully in devotional service." Not that we don't study the books, because that obviously gives us a support and clears the mind of misgivings and, misidentification, attachments, right? Chanting Hare Krishna, all of those things. But very often, the realization comes through the activity of engaging in devotional service. Very powerful. So therefore, go out on book distribution, chant Hare Krishna, read the books, take prasad and associate with the devotees, but then go out and preach.
For young ones, Sujan education is very important.
For young ones?
Asat Santya.
What about old ones?
Old ones, they are a bit immune to.
Immune. That's because they've reached a level of advancement.
Maturity.
Not only that, they don't associate with Asat Sangha, that's why. They've learned. Yeah, I think for old ones too. Old and young alike. Asat Sangha Tya, give up bad association. But see, when you take on the association of the devotees, then what automatically happens? You'll get engaged in devotional service. Right? When Achintya Rupa and I stayed in the temple the first night, it was Janmashtami, so the devotees didn't have somebody to wash the pots. So they said, "Hey, Bhakta Andy, would you like to go and wash the pots?" "Yeah, why not?" That was the reason why they came and got me to stay in the temple. So, that's why association is powerful. Otherwise, associate with the
mummies.
Yeah, and then what is it? "Hey, come on, let's go down the pub." Or whatever. I think we should finish here. Grandavaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Nitai Gaura Premanandi.